We'll vote up the Senate Committee on Business and Transportation for Monday, February 8th. And we will begin by opening a work session on Senate Bill 1019. Mr. Stenbridge, we had a hearing on this last week.
Yes.
And we have an additional amendment.
Mr. Chairman, this is an omnibus transportation bill. It makes corrections to several bills from the 2009 session, plus it has some additional elements. You have the dash 2, the dash 5, and the dash 6. The dash 6 is new today. We've distributed copies to you, and we have some for the audience as well. This is from Senator Starr, restricts the definition of highway work zone to times when highway workers are actually present. We have fiscal and revenue statements for the dash 2 and the dash 5, and we are waiting on one for the dash 6. I should point out that you have statements issued on the dash 2 and the dash 5. In the statement, it does state that the actual fiscal impact is minimal.
Okay. And so we still have to adopt 2, 5, and 6, correct? We have not adopted those three.
Correct.
Right. Colleagues, this is the one that we discussed earlier, and we have no fiscal on the 2-5. We haven't got the one from Senator Starr yet, but we did pass that exact amendment last year out of the committee, and it did not have a fiscal, and in talking offline with the department, anticipate there's no reason that would change. So in the interest of time, I think we should adopt the amendments and move the bill to the floor.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move the dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 1019.
Senator Starr has moved the dash 2 amendments to Senate Bill 1019. Discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move the dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 1019.
Senator Starr has moved the dash 5 amendments to Senate Bill 1019. Discussion? Is there any objection? So ordered. Senator Starr.
Move the dash 6 amendments to Senate Bill 1019.
Senator Starr has moved the dash 6 amendments to Senate Bill 1019. Discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the bill as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 1019 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator George.
What happened, because I didn't follow exactly, dash 4 amendments with DAS's amendments on C?
It's now included into the dash 5.
Okay, great, thanks.
Is there further discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Starr, I'll ask you to carry, and then maybe you can introduce your guest up to the dais.
Thank you. Yes, for those of you that weren't on the Senate floor, we do have a guest, Scott Pershide, that's joining me today on my travels as a senator. Just like to welcome Scott. I'm glad that he's able to join us.
Thank you, Scott. Thanks for joining us today. And... okay, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 1019, open a work session on Senate Bill 1024. Mr. Stenbridge.
Mr. Chairman, this is Senator Johnson's bill on highway access. You have the Dash 2 amendment, which replaces the bill. It establishes criteria for acquiring new approach permits for highway access issued by the Department of Transportation when there are changes of use. It requires ODOT to adopt rules that are less stringent for highway segments averaging 5,000 vehicles or fewer daily, and it requires ODOT to develop proposed legislation for access management based on objective standards. It requires ODOT to report to the Legislative Assembly prior to January 2011, and it declares an emergency effective upon passage.
Okay. Mr. Tindall, would you come forward, please? I'll introduce yourself for a second, but we had discussed this bill, and we had a little discussion about what the intent was in our original hearing in terms of costs, in terms of administrative rules. And if you could give me your comments on the Dash 2 and whether that has rectified that for the department or where we might be with that.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, Doug Tindall, Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Transportation. The Dash 2 amendments, just because of the process that we followed through the fiscal, or how we do fiscals, the Dash 2 amendments alleviate, and some of the conversation we had about the intent of the legislature to do this in a cooperative manner, alleviate most of the fiscal. The fiscal that you see before you, or if it's before you, I believe is $20,000. We have a standard fiscal that we put on for amending a rule, which the other language will require. We'll have to take some things out of rule because they're now in statute from the existing rule. And then we just estimated that we may need some money for a facilitator or if things go poorly between Mr. Whitlow and I, a marriage counselor. So the fiscal is no more than 20. I believe the number is $20,000 that you see before.
Okay. And just a reminder again, colleagues, we just had that discussion because there was a way it could be interpreted that we'd have to go open up a full ORA process, and that was not the intent. And
right.
That's why we have the dash two to eliminate that. Is there any questions for Mr. Tindall while he's up here? Okay. If not, then we have a dash two amendment before us.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson is here also.
That's all right.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson, we're just going to pass your bill.
That's what I came to watch.
All right. All right. Senator Starr.
Move the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 1024.
Senator Starr has moved the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 1024. Discussion? Any objection? It's ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move the bill as amended to Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 1024 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Johnson, would you please carry that bill?
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Fiscal.
Now, we're just going to wait a few seconds, right?
Yes.
And then we're going to do 1039. Let me see.
I didn't see it.
Open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 1039 and ask Senator Telfer to come forward.
You guys are quick.
Yeah.
We try to be.
Well, I just had chocolate over in revenue, so.
You're fine.
Well,
your 4-minute speech will go in 2 minutes now.
Okay. There we go. Chair Metzger, members of the committee. Back in Prohibition era, it was probably okay to limit full on-premise liquor licenses to nonprofits such as the Elks, the Moose, Veterans Clubs, and golf courses. Today, though, we have a different business and climate. It's been a number of years. We now have a lot of for-profit clubs, clubs that have members such as one I have in Bend, which is a wine club. And I believe you will be getting shortly some written testimony from Adam Bledsoe, who first brought this issue to me. And so he's unable to be here today. And so he's going to give you a letter. But in any case, the current statute, therefore, is out of date. And Senate Bill 1039 merely attempts to modernize it by allowing for-profit clubs the same ability to apply for full on-premise liquor license. We're not asking for any special considerations in this bill for them, just broadening the scope so that for-profit clubs can also get a liquor license or apply for a full on-premise liquor license the same as nonprofits. The bill also attempts to maintain the fact that nonprofits are allowed a lower license fee. And so we're still trying to protect that. So you see a lot of verbiage in there about nonprofits as well as for-profit clubs. I also want to thank Steve Farrow and the OLCC for their work with my constituents on this matter, as well as those in Portland. There are a number of clubs in Portland. And actually drafting the verbiage of the bill. So I'll be happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you, Senator. Is there any questions for Senator Telfer? Senator Berg.
Thank you, Senator Telfer. I'm very willing to consider this bill. I just like to think that I'm considering a bill that's going to affect a lot of people. We have bills that come to the legislature for one individual and a constituent, and I've brought bills like that myself, so I can understand that. But do you feel that this is a far-reaching problem across the state of Oregon?
Chair Metzger, Senator Berger, far-reaching may be a little far. There are a number of clubs throughout the state. There are a few in Portland. I know there's at least one in Bend. The one in Bend obviously wants to expand. So it does touch a number of businesses throughout the state.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Linda Ignowski and Bill Perry, please.
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Linda Agnowski. I'm the Regulatory Services Director for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. I'm here today to give testimony on Senate Bill 1039. And as you heard from Senator Telfer, this has been a long-standing, historically, private clubs were only allowed for non-profit. This bill will expand the ability for other entities to receive an on-premises license, a full on-premises. And for you, just for clarification, a full on-premises license is for those entities that want to serve wine, beer, and spirits for by the drink on their licensed premises. Technically, the statute right now allows for nonprofits, and it gives an exception for private golf clubs and for private athletic clubs. And it's been like that for many years. The bill has simplified the language also. If you'll see, there's some sections that is pretty much eliminated for nonprofit. That language is pretty complicated and it's really outdated, and so we're suggesting we eliminate that section, and that the OLCC has already put a lot of those requirements in by rule, so that section is not needed. But it talks about having adequate servants, and people can't be paid, and so there's some language in that just doesn't need to be needed anymore. The Commission currently has rules in place for nonprofit clubs that set forth certain requirements such as minimum number of members, ensuring that food service is available, and ensure that these clubs, in fact, are recognized as nonprofit entities in the state of Oregon. If this bill is adopted, we're proposed to adopt some similar rules that around for-profit, maybe a minimum number of members will define rights and privileges, will help to ensure the club is a legitimate club. A small concern that you may want to consider or think about with granting liquor licenses for for-profit private clubs may be a challenge to create for enforcement activities. Currently, it is very difficult to do minor decor operations and enforcement activities in our own non-profit private clubs because it's hard to get into. You have to let them know who you are before you can get into them. So we may need to look at additional rules to ensure that we have the ability to enter these premises, but there is current law that requires law enforcement and OLCC to be entering this. So it's a small concern, but I think it will be overcome.
Thank you, Ms. Agnowski. I'm just curious, since this has been in effect for many, many years, based on your knowledge, has the OLCC had any complaints from the not-for-profit clubs that have full liquor services, like the Elks or the Eagles? Has that been an issue very much where you've had those types of complaints?
Senator Metzger, no. The non-profit clubs have been very good licensees, and we have not had any problems with them.
Yeah. This is certainly anecdotal. There's no facts about it, but in my experience in visiting those types of clubs, I mean, it's almost like self-patrolling because of the people who are members, which would substantiate what you say. When I've been in those facilities, I think it would be unlikely that minors would be served and things with the type of clientele that are there, and would be concerned about that. So I appreciate that. Any other questions for Ms. Agnowski from the OLCC? Mr. Perry, we almost bypassed you.
She probably didn't want to listen to me any.
Almost bypassed us.
I always listen to you, Bill.
Thank you, Chair Metzger, members of the committee. For the record, Bill Perry at the Oregon Restaurant Association. We're supportive of the bill. Actually, I've had conversations with Ms. Agnowski and others. I still, to this point, don't understand why we have a private club rule. I do think that taking rid of it altogether would be probably counterproductive in some, but just from my vantage point, if you sell alcohol, you need to make sure you don't sell to minors, you need to make sure you don't overserve. Whether a establishment wants to limit their clientele to 100 or serve 100,000 really shouldn't be OLCC's concern, as long as they're not misserving alcohol. So I think, this change, I don't think is going to create any problems or any issues, but I don't really understand the purpose of it being there in the first place. So I don't know if that be short and sweet and simple. But
all right. Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Perry? Thank you.
Okay.
Is anybody else wants to testify on Senate Bill 1039? Okay, we'll close the public hearing, and if it be the wish of the committee, I'll open a work session and entertain a motion. And
Mr. Chair, I move the bill to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 1039 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion. Is there any objection? It's ordered. We'll ask Senator Telfer to carry the bill. Okay. Now, we're going to open up a public hearing on, work session, on Senate Bill 1050. Mr. Stanbridge, maybe you could update us where we are since...
Yes, Mr. Chairman. This is the Buy American bill. It requires the public bodies doing real property improvements and maintenance projects Buy American. You have the Dash 2 amendment, which was brought forth by the sponsors. It makes provisions applicable to direct appropriations. Only remember the original bill talked about indirect appropriations and other confusing sort of language. The Dash 2 amendment also adds exemptions for expenditures that would be inconsistent with public interest, emergencies, and projects of less than $750,000. It also changes the effective date to July 1st, 2011. It declares an emergency effective upon passage. That's the Dash 2. We asked for it. You may notice the date on the Dash 2. It came out this morning. We've asked for a fiscal analysis to be done, but did not expect it back by the time this meeting.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Tribbett, you want to come forward and just discuss with us briefly how this was arrived at and your opinion of what it does versus our previous conversation on the bill?
Thank you. For the record, Ryan Trivett with the Iron Workers Local 29 and the Building Trades Council. There's been a significant amount of conversation that we've had with a number of interested parties. Senator Verger held a work group that was well attended and put a lot of the ideas out on the table. A couple of them we had talked about in the last committee hearing and have been included in the Dash 2s. That would be the piece that includes the federal preemption. If there is already a federal Buy American policy that's being followed, it is not our intent for that for a second state Buy American process to be followed. They would just follow the federal process. The other piece that was discussed last time was making a giving some clarification that there would be an emergency declaration that if in that case of natural disasters or unforeseen sort of health and safety circumstances that could opt out of the Buy American requirements. The third and the biggest piece of it is the piece where we took out the tax credits, the tax abatements, the loan guarantees. That was from a conversation we had with Senator Starr. That was also an issue that was brought up at the work group from a number of parties that seemed to cause a lot of heartburn in how they would go about implementing that because it was outside the definition of what a subsidy is in current public contracting law. So this should revert us back to that.
Okay. Questions for Mr. Trivett? Senator Starr.
So, under the amendment, it looks like the bill does not become effective until July 1 of 2011, and yet you have an emergency clause on the bill?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, I called Legislative Council to ask them that very question, and they said that was to ensure that the agencies could take any steps they needed to in preparation for it going into effect, any steps they needed to take so that they could implement it starting July 1, 2011.
There are questions for Mr. Trivett. Senator George.
Ryan, obviously, in my family, I have a lot of pressure from local government-type folks, and so I want to address this. My understanding is a lot of local governments are having a tough time implementing the federal mandate on Buy American, and it's actually delaying some of the stimulus money coming through trying to comply with this particular statute. So you sort of have counter issues going on. Especially for local governments who may not have the staff to deal with this. I see this maybe a hindrance to actually getting jobs on the ground in Oregon. I mean, we may be buying steel from Chicago, and that may help folks in Chicago, but in the meantime, we have people unemployed here in Oregon. Work this through with me and how this would work with local governments and how you think this would work as far as, because these are already stretched staffs, the local government level.
It's a good question. I think there are a number of things that are keeping up the federal stimulus dollars from coming through, not just this one thing. And I would say that it is in our interest, the interest of the people I represent, that we be thoughtful about how we go about implementing these things and not just rush to go give jobs to people in China or other states. You get what I'm getting at? We could rush and let the process go through without such provisions and ensure the rapid employment of people in China, and that isn't what we're interested in.
Mr. Chair, I guess, Randy, the question is that for local government, I'm trying to just address the local government implementation. The state has much more resources. How do we make this easier for local governments to implement? Do you see what I'm saying? This could be a fairly complex process at the local government level. Is there some way that you could see that local governments could be kind of either dealt with or taken out of this bill to make it a little easier for them to move these stimulus dollars, both, you know, our state transportation bill that we moved through last time, and then also some of the federal dollars coming through? Because they just don't have the staff to kind of deal with additional procedures and getting projects to turning dirt. Is there any consideration on how we could do that to make it a little easier for local governments? I don't think it should be punitive on local governments. We should encourage them to do so, but if they're trying to turn dirt and get Oregonians hired, I'd hate to see this actually or slow down the process of getting Oregonians hired and doing jobs in local government projects because they don't have the staff to deal with another mandate from us.
For that answer, I would go back to testimony from last time where the reason why we designed this the way we did was to mirror the federal process so they wouldn't have a different process to learn a separate sort of thing. So short of, if the idea that you're talking about is to exempt them out of it, well, then that would then limit the impact of the bill.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions for Mr. Rivera? You have a question, Senator Berger?
No, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make some comments for you before I think others will come up and testify. I was asked to sponsor a bill about Buying American, and it is a complex issue. I think that our work group pointed that out very much. We had a large group of people who came to the work group with very sincere concerns, and the purpose here is to do no harm. It is to get a bill out that encourages companies to buy American and to keep American workers employed. It can't all be on price, and I believe the bill says if it's not a significant increase in price. We've gone so much in our country to price that when you go into a store today, it would be very difficult to find any garment, any blouse or skirt, any shoes, or anything made in America. It's all made in foreign countries. It's coming from foreign countries because they make things cheaper. And we've liked that. And so we have created this marketplace of all foreign materials. And that's not the only consequence, but our American workers, by the hundreds of thousands, have become unemployed in this crisis. And so I think that when anyone comes to me and asks me to sponsor something, that is going to mean that we're going to do more for our own country and more to help employ the American worker. They get my attention. That does not mean, Mr. Chair, that I think that we need to get together as much as possible, and I'm sure other people will testify today about concerns. We're trying to address those concerns, and I'm encouraging those that I dropped the bill for to be as cooperative in listening to the concerns of local governments and ports and others that have come to the work group and express those. But I do think that, and I would hope, that all will bear in mind that we are now at a tipping point in America, And so we need to really evaluate the kind of policy that we're setting, both in Oregon and across our nation, that are going to keep all of us employed. Or, if we'd like, we might even eventually spend foreign money in our country. So, having said that, Mr. Chair, I would welcome any other testimony that's to be made.
Thank you. Yeah, any other questions for Mr. Trivett at the moment? Thank you. So, members, what we're going to do here is we're in a work session. We're not in a public hearing today. We had, as the Senator pointed out, a large group of people were discussing this the other day, and I have that list, and I see them all here, or at least most of them, maybe even more. My plan is, first of all, on Wednesday, we'll have a public hearing because I want people to absorb this amendment and also really encourage people for written comments on the Dash 2 to get those into committee members so that we can talk more about that. But we will use a little time to have some of that feedback today. But I'm not going to do it all as a public hearing process. I'm going to have some folks come up to give us a flavor, you know, who've had a chance to actually look at the Dash 2, because, again, we're talking about the Dash 2 now. And then we will be more extensive on this on Wednesday. We don't have a fiscal, so we're not moving the bill today. And I really want people to absorb this and look at what issues are addressed or if they believe are not addressed, so we can spend more time with that on Wednesday. So what I would ask now, though, and we'll do this for about 20 minutes or so, those who would like to give some brief comments on the Dash 2 and like to start that off today rather than Wednesday, and if not, then we'll hear from you on Wednesday rather than today. The chair would entertain anyone who would like to make a comment today. Anybody wish to make a comment on the Dash 2 today? Please come forward, identify yourself.
Good afternoon, Senator Metzger and members of the committee. My name is Doug Young. I'm the new prison construction administrator for the Department of Corrections. As I look around this room with the requirements of Senate Bill 1050 in mind, I contemplate how to implement the requirements into a major construction project. On the surface, the iron and the steel requirements seem straightforward. If our reinforcing steel is provided by the mill in McMinnville, it does seem to meet the requirements of Senate Bill 1050. But does the old Datsun and the old VW Bug recycled into rebar at McMinnville, will that be allowed as American-made material? Would a PVC pipe manufactured in Umatilla meet the requirements if some of the chemical components were manufactured from foreign oil? At our Madras facility, we challenged our local contractor to find potential project savings. One of the ideas they brought was to use heating and ventilating equipment that was assembled in Mexico instead of San Diego with American components, and it saved the Oregon taxpayers over $250,000. But that was less than 1% of the contract price. So would that have been allowed under this? The implementation and the tracking and the potential audits for this bill from my chair seem very daunting. If you have, do you bid it two different ways, Buy America and not by America? Is there a formula, as there are in some of the federal requirements, to allow non-American products used, 6%, 12%, whatever those are? How do we evaluate the bids? What is the threshold for the Dash 2 for the public good? Those are some of the implementation pieces that concern me and the department. We are totally for Buy America and Buy Local, but the implementation and the definitions of manufactured goods are something that we really need to look at, and are more than happy to continue working with folks to get there.
Thank you, Mr. Young. Questions?
I'd like to respond to the components. I believe that if the components are made in a foreign country and are brought to this country and are assembled in this country, they fall under the Buy American.
The federal rule, as I read it.
Under the federal act, yes.
But what we did for Madras would not have been allowed.
I think that's probably true.
Thank you for your comments. Any comments for... Thank you. Anybody else wishing to comment on the Dash 2 today on Senate Bill 1050? Okay, so again, just a reminder, written testimony as you evaluate would be helpful as early as possible so that the members can gather that information, and if we want to discuss that also with you, that would be helpful. We will have a public hearing sign up for that on Wednesday. I know there's a lot of interested parties here. I know the proponents have tried at the Dash 2 to try to address some of the concerns from our original public hearing, so we need to get that information to see whether that is sufficiently addressed or where we are with that. And we will do that on Wednesday, and we'll have a fiscal at that time also. Once we get a fiscal, by the way, Mr. Stembers will have that. That'll be available to anybody who would request that. But as you know, in this short process, we're trying to do things as organized as we possibly can and make sure that you have an opportunity to testify where you're fully informed of what we might be talking about, which is also helpful. Did Senator Schrader, do you have a comment?
No.
Oh, okay. Senator Scar.
Thank you. Are we expecting further amendments? Is the work group that you referenced going to meet again to try to hammer out additional compromise? I guess I'd just like to get a sense of where the sponsor and the chair might be headed.
Well, I think I would defer to Senator Verger on that.
Yeah. There is no reason to continue to come before the committee unless we have some support for the bill and unless we're addressing all of the issues. And so I would think that for those who still have issues after the amendment, after they've seen it, then it would be very good if we could have a reconvening of the work group. And so that you can, if we can't get a time that we can reconvene, if you individually can bring the material to me so that I understand what your concerns are after we've addressed the concerns up until now. The purpose here is to get to yes. I have no doubt in my mind that every person in this room is for America. I watched the Super Bowl, and of course my Saints won. So that was, and so that's what the American spirit is about. And people across this nation pull for New Orleans, not just people like me that were born a little north of there. But I just think we need to get to yes some way, but if we have to write it down to where the bill is worth nothing, then obviously it won't move forward. So it's got to have some meat in it, and it's got to be able to make things better for companies to buy American and American companies, or it won't be worthwhile. So that in mind, I welcome all of you. I'd be happy to work with you again, meet with you again, and let's see if we can get something that's viable in the bill.
Thank you, Senator Burcher. Any other questions?
Thank you.
Okay. With that, we will close the work session on Senate Bill 1050. We will be back here Wednesday at 1 o'clock, and this will be our major item. We have a few other small ones on the agenda then, and with that, we're adjourned.
Go ahead. Yeah.